Welcome to this podcast for November and December. The nights are now at their longest and the sun sets well before 5 p.m. in November and just after 4 p.m. in December. December the 21st is the winter solstice. That means the Earth's axis is tilted so the northern hemisphere sees the sun at the lowest possible angle during the day. It also means that from then on the nights will start to get shorter again. It's even more important to wrap up well for stargazing at this time of year. The winter sky has a different beauty to the summer sky. In the summer sky, the majestic Milky Way steals the show. But in the winter, although the Milky Way can still be seen, it's much less bright as we're looking away from the centre of our galaxy. Instead, we have a greater number of closer and therefore, to our eyes, brighter stars. So the winter night sky seems to be especially sparkling. As usual, we'll start the session by facing south. If you're looking at the sky in early November or early in the evening in December, the stars and constellations we will be looking at will be a little further to the east, your left, and a bit lower down than they might be later in the evening or in December. It makes a difference at this time of year simply because the nights are so much longer. We'll start by looking for the constellation of Taurus the Bull. As those born in late April or early May probably know, it's one of the star signs. In other words, it's in the zodiac, or, as astronomers call it, the ecliptic. This is the imaginary line that the sun follows through the year, and the line where the planets can be found. In 2020, the planet Mars can be seen just to the west in Pisces, another constellation on the ecliptic. By March, Mars will have moved into Taurus, and it will again be in Taurus in the winter of 2022. Taurus is a very ancient constellation. It's at least as old as the early Bronze Age, probably because it's so distinctive. It can be found as an obvious west-pointing triangle of what appears to be at first 5 stars, but on closer inspection is found to be many more, particularly in binoculars. It's just below and to the east, or your left, of the famous Little Pleiades cluster, and a very distinctive winter feature. This is the head of the bull. Its horns extend off to the east, and the Pleiades makes up part of its, albeit rather contorted, body. There's an obvious very bright orange star in the lower left of the triangle. This is Aldebaran, the so-called eye of the bull. Its name comes from Arabic, meaning follower, probably as it follows the Pleiades across the sky. It is red because it's a red giant. That is, it's a star that is coming to the end of its life and has bloated up to an enormous size and cooled down a bit to just under 4,000 degrees Celsius. Aldebaran is 518 times brighter than our own sun and 44 times bigger, although only 16% more massive. Have a look at Aldebaran with binoculars or a telescope. It's a wonderful sight, and it really brings out the gorgeous colour and brilliance. Aldebaran, like many other stars, has companion stars that it is gravitationally bound to, and it also has a planetary system. If you look at Aldebaran with binoculars, take a moment to look around it. You'll easily notice there are not just a few, but dozens of stars nearby. Some of them obvious doubles. You're looking at the Hyades cluster. In fact, Aldebaran is not part of the cluster, it's just in line of sight and half the distance away. The Hyades cluster is our nearest open cluster, and it's about 153 light-years away. It's about 625 million years old, which is quite young in astronomical terms. Stars form in open clusters from huge clouds of interstellar gas and dust. After forming, they slowly drift apart as they cruise around the galaxy. What you see today is just a fragment of what was once a much larger cluster. There are fragments of this larger cluster elsewhere in the sky, and we'll meet one of them in the spring in the constellation of Cancer, that is, the Beehive cluster. Now look up, and a bit to the west, to the tight little group of what appears to be 5 or 6 stars. This is the Pleiades, another open cluster. It's also called the Seven Sisters from a mythology that they represent 7 divine sisters. In fact, 7 stars are not visible by eye, but if you look with binoculars or any telescope, you'll see that there are dozens of stars in the cluster. In fact, astronomers now recognise over 1,000 stars belonging to this group. The cluster is much younger than the Hyades, not more than 150 million years old. The stars are young, hot blue stars and stunningly beautiful with any optical aid. The wide field view of binoculars is particularly suited to the Pleiades. If you view them with a large telescope, they can appear to have a mist around them. This is the starlight reflecting off interstellar dust. It makes for enchanting astrophotographs. The group is about 136 light years away. Now let's move to another constellation. Starting from the Pleiades, look up and a bit to your left or east. You should be able to see a very bright, slightly yellow star. It's easily the brightest star in the sky and by late December almost overhead. This star is Capella, and it's the third brightest star in the whole northern celestial hemisphere, and the sixth brightest star seen from Earth. It gets its name from Latin meaning little goat. It's in the constellation of Auriga. Auriga is traditionally known as the charioteer, but parts of it were known as the goat herd. He's holding the goat Capella over his left shoulder. The two little stars just to the right and below Capella are baby goats. They are often called the kids and form quite a distinctive asterism on their own. Capella is quite near to the sun at only 49 light years, which accounts for its brightness in our sky. In fact, it's not a single star, but a complex multi-star system. The main star has a mass around 2.5 times that of the sun, and it's around 600 million years old. Now let's look at the constellation itself. It consists mainly of 5 reasonably obvious stars that form an irregular pentagon. Capella is at the top right. Look a little bit to the east, or your left, and you'll see another bright star. This is called Mancallinan. Now, go down and a bit east. You'll come to a slightly dimmer star called Mahasim. This name comes from the Arabic word for wrist, of the charioteer, but most astronomers use its technical name, Theta Aurigae. Okay, so next go straight down to the bright star called Elnath. In fact, Elnath is usually classified as being at the end of one of the horns of Taurus, but for stargazing, it's convenient to see it as part of Auriga. From Elnath, we now need to go up and west again to a star called Hasaleh. Although this name's hardly ever used, and it's also usually known by its technical name of Iota Aurigae. Now, to complete the constellation, go back up past the kids to Capella. Go around the constellation a few times with your eye, and you'll remember it for the future. For observers with a telescope, Auriga has some wonderful open clusters, although they're much farther away than the Hyades or Pleiades, so much smaller and dimmer. You can also find them with binoculars, though they appear as fuzzy patches of light. The 3 brightest can be found in a line. Start by looking at the 3rd star around anticlockwise from Capella. Remember, that is Theta Aurigae. Then look at the star below it in the constellation. That's Elnath. Now imagine a line drawn between these 2 stars and go halfway between the 2. If you look at this point with binoculars and then move a little to the east or your left and a little to the west or your right, you should be able to find them. The one just to the left of the line is called the Salt and Pepper Cluster, the one just to the right the Pinwheel Cluster, and the last one in line to the west is called the Starfish Cluster. This last one is also called the Letter Pi Cluster. If you see it in a small telescope, you'll see why. The stars form the shape of the mathematical symbol and Greek letter pi. Each of these clusters is almost 4,500 light years away, so you'd be looking at them as they looked about the time Stonehenge was built. Auriga has around 7 open clusters that can be explored with a telescope. It can be a bit daunting at first trying to find your way among the stars just by description and without having them pointed out. If you found the stars described, then well done. If you couldn't follow it, don't worry, just try again. The main thing is to make sure you find the bright star Capella first and look for the misshapen pentagon. Follow it around with your eye a few times and you'll soon get the hang of it. So in this talk, we started by looking at the close star clusters in Taurus, called the Hyades and Pleiades, and the magnificent red Aldebaran. Then we moved up from Taurus to find the constellation of Auriga and the bright star Capella. We worked our way around Auriga from Capella and discovered the hidden star clusters that it contains. You may be wondering why there are so many open star clusters in this part of the sky. The answer is that Taurus and Auriga both lie partly within the Milky Way. And that, of course, is where stars are formed, so that's where the star clusters are. The winter Milky Way is much less obvious than the part we see in summer. You may be able to just about see it. If you can, follow it up and a bit to the west. It goes virtually overhead, then passes through a constellation that looks like the letter W. That is Cassiopeia, and the line you've just followed has dozens of beautiful open clusters waiting to be discovered with binoculars or a telescope. If it's early in the evening in November and you keep following the Milky Way through Cassiopeia, you'll end up in Cygnus, the swan, and Aquila, the eagle, that are described in the podcast for the late summer. If you get lost, don't despair. Try using one of the phone apps such as Sky Safari or Stellarium, or use a star chart or planisphere. The important thing to do is when you recognise a constellation, spend some time looking at it in the various patterns the stars make, because that is the way you'll learn the night sky.
This project has received funding by the Regional Tourism Engagement Fund and supported through the Welsh Government Rural Communities Rural Development Programme 2014-2020, which is funded by the European Agricultural Fund for Rural Development and the Welsh Government. The fund to improve the visitor experience and create stronger destinations by working together.